This week's clerk version is called Give Here. That is in Give Here. I can see a picture of somebody taking their ears and giving them away, but I don't think that's what it's about. Actually, in the beginning of it, it says, "Hear, O heavens, as I speak, listen, earth, to the words from my mouth." So it would seem, perhaps, that everything in creation on earth and outside of earth are being called to listen. And certainly, the people of Israel are being called to listen. And Rashi comments that Moshe is calling the heavens and the earth as witnesses to the warning that he is about to deliver to Israel, and then asks the question, why? Why did Moshe need witnesses? Because, Rashi answers, Moshe said, "I am flesh and blood, tomorrow I will be dead. If Israel were to say we did not accept the covenant upon ourselves, who would come and contradict them?" This is why he called witnesses to last forever. Moshe was telling Israel that there would always be witnesses to the covenant and to Israel's acceptance of it. Our people were to be permanently put on notice. Jeremiah the prophet makes an interesting comment to this perspective when he says, "This is what Adonai says, who gives the sun as light for the day, who ordained the laws for the moon and the stars, who provide light for the night, who stirs up the sea until its waves roar. Adonai Tzibaot is his name. If these laws leave my presence, says Adonai, then the offspring of Israel will stop being a nation in my presence forever." Jeremiah 31, 34, and 35. So, the only way that God's promises and covenant and faithfulness with Israel would ever come to an end, it would seem that it would involve things like this. Like, if I held this out and let go and it didn't fall, then I might wonder, has God dissolved his covenant? If I threw a ball into the air and it never came back to the ground, or if it just kept on moving forever, I don't know, that might make me wonder, are the physical laws of the universe starting to change? If the stars all disappeared, or they all fell to the earth, or if the sea didn't, water didn't stay in a pond, if everything that we expect creation to be like completely reversed itself and ceased to be, and there was no order to it, well, I think the scriptures are saying that, well, then that could be evidence that God is giving up on Israel, and that Israel is no longer his people. The earth is fixed in the place that it's in, and everything operates according to physical laws the way that they do, so only if to operate the way that God put them in place and made them operate. Then, at that time, Israel would stop being a nation in his presence forever. So I think what he's saying is that as long as it gets dark in the evening and it gets light in the morning, and as long as rain falls and waters the earth, and as long as trees grow and things fall down instead of up, and all the rest of the things you can name, as long as all those things that we certainly believe will continue and take for granted continue, then God is saying that Israel is still his chosen people. And I think that is a big deal. I think it's a really big deal. And closer to the end, it says, he said to them, take to your heart all the words with which I am warning you today, which you shall command your sons to observe carefully, even all the words of this law. For it is not an idle word. It is not an idle word for you. Indeed, it is your life. And by this word you will prolong your days in the land which you are about to cross the Jordan to possess. So, this word is their life. And I'm fond of saying, I guess, that there is no redemption for anyone apart from Israel. And not really sure what that sounds like to various people, but and we're about to enter Sukkot, and in the book of Zechariah, it talks about this great ingathering and things that will happen. There are things said about the nations worshiping with Israel. I don't know if I can think of a time in history when all the nations of the earth came up to worship the God of Israel with Israel. It seems to me that that hasn't happened. I mean, I think there's evidence of it. More and more people from all over the world have gone there and worshiped with Messianic Jews who believe in Yeshua, but that doesn't seem like the fulfillment of what it's talking about in the prophets. It seems like something much bigger is coming. And in the beginning of the Gospel of John, it says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and apart from him, nothing came into being that has come into being. In him was life. In the Torah portion, it says, this word is your life. In the beginning of John, it talks about the word that was God, was with God, and in the beginning was the word, and the word was with God, and the word was God. And John is saying that this word is life. Life is in this word. And this word is a hymn called Yeshua. So all things came into being through him, and apart from him, nothing came into being that has come into being. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shined in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it. It's amazing. And so, as I look at the gospel, if I try to imagine it, if I try to imagine it apart from Israel and God's choosing of Israel and God's faithfulness to Israel, I actually can't imagine it. It just vanishes apart from God's choosing of Israel. And so I wonder, I think, well, what is it a person can put confidence in about God? Just that God saves them individually? And I wonder, well, what's really the fullness of the evidence that an individual has actually been redeemed by God? And when I think about that, I think, well, if God got rid of Israel, I'm not sure if I could have confidence in anything that he said, especially since God seems to be saying that if I ever get rid of Israel, gravity's not going to work anymore, and the sun and the moon aren't going to act the way they act now, and I'm not going to give up on Israel ever. I'm not going to get rid of her. And I'm telling you that as long as the sun and the moon act the way you expect them to, listen up. Israel is still my people. And so, since everything, I think we all believe that God knows everything. He has known everything. And Yeshua is the Lamb slain before the ages. And then that God has works for us to walk in. And the scriptures say that those works were created and ordained for us to walk in before the foundation of the world. And God was going to redeem humanity before there even was a humanity. And the Son was with him and is him, is, was, always was, in the bosom of the Father, and he was going to come. Israel and perhaps more than two ways, but it came to the Swedes through God's faithfulness and the faithfulness of Israel. Anyone disagree? And it also came to the Swedes through God's faithfulness in the unfaithfulness of Israel. God used the faithfulness of Israel and Israel's unfaithfulness to bring the gospel to the people I come from. The glory goes to God. No glory goes to man. The Israelites didn't deserve to be the people of God. There is no people that ever has. And frankly, if you look at God's plan of redemption and the way he seems to do things, as much as it might not be the way we would have written the book, if there was a people that was worthy of God choosing them, everything would have to be completely different. Because then something would be based on the merit of man. But nothing is based on the merit of man. So even Abraham, who Paul says must have something to boast about, says, but not before God. Nothing to boast about. So I am unbelievably grateful to God for his choosing of Israel, his faithfulness to Israel, his faithfulness to Israel when Israel was faithful, at least acting faithful in part, and his faithfulness to Israel when Israel was acting like a wayward woman. Because, see, that proves to me that the righteousness of God's Son is imparted to me because of God's nature and God's faithfulness and God's promises, and God never, ever just changes his mind. He's not arbitrary, and we can count on his nature, we can count on his word, just like we can count on sunrise and sunset. And God orders the sunrise and the sunset. He causes day to come. He causes night to fall. And so, in personal terms, I just find it to be so amazingly, comprehensively assuring about my own standing before God, that God is so faithful to his people Israel. And when I see how he brings about his will, you know, God used the betrayal of Joseph by his brothers. That seems to be real unfaithfulness. Yeah, they had a grudge. They felt like Daddy loved him more than everybody else. And he did. Yeah. He did. And they're completely guilty of what they did. But God is completely righteous in using what they did to bring about his will. So even there, I see the unfaithfulness of Israel being used to bring about God's plan of redemption for the world. And Joseph goes off to Egypt, and the stage is set for, it's a long time, 400 years of slavery is a long time. A lot of people lived and died. They never saw the redemption. It's painful to think about it. But God sets the stage. And he sets the stage for what? don't know, maybe we could call it a massive war of independence. God's people against the powers of darkness, because that's really what Pharaoh represents, is the kingdom of this world. Wants to completely enslave mankind, own mankind, and keep mankind oppressed. And so there's this big battle, and the whole world is given notice, and it's displayed for everyone to see that this God that chooses this slave people, that frequently doesn't even seem to be believing him while the redemption is happening, not even after things like you have light, and there isn't any light anywhere else, and the plagues don't fall on them, but they fall on the Egyptians. God broke the will of Pharaoh and set Israel free, and he used the unfaithfulness of Joseph's brothers to set it up, and he used the faithfulness of Joseph to set the stage to save Israel, bring Israel into slavery, and then ultimately the choice of Moses to bring them out so that God would be glorified and that it would be emphasized that Israel is God's chosen people. And the purpose of God choosing Israel is to bring God's redemption to all of humanity. And Israel's faithfulness and Israel's unfaithfulness, all the glory and all the shame, it does serve to do one thing. To make sure that it's God that gets the glory. It's God that is shown to be righteous. It's God that is shown to be the Redeemer. And to be merciful and loving despite the severity of God. He's kind and tender and calls his children, his creation, come back to him, to come to him and become his children indeed, and he does it through Israel, and through all the glory and the shame of Israel. And into the world through Israel. I have encountered a notion that some people don't think that Yeshua is a Jew anymore. Some theologies essentially deny his humanity, almost describing him as a spirit that just came and animated a body, using it like a puppet. Something like the hand of a ventriloquist stuck inside of a dummy. People have tried to describe the nature of God and the nature of the Son to the point that they come up with many heresies. But I believe that Yeshua came in the flesh and that he was fully man and fully God, that he partook of our nature so that we could partake of the divine nature, however the mystery of that is described. It's not an easy thing, dangerous to try to define it completely. So he came and became our brother. And he remains our brother as well as he remains the Word that was God, was with God, and through whom everything was made. And so when he ascended in bodily form. Paul says about the bodies we will have, I don't know what it is we will be exactly, but we will all be changed. But the fulfillment of everything that God promises is not just being absent from the body and going to be with the Lord. Ultimately, it's being present in the body and present with the Lord. And complete fellowship with human beings and God, made entirely deep and fully possible by the incarnation of Yeshua. In that sense, God and man are joined as one, as Yeshua gets his bride, can't marry a bride he has nothing in common with. God chose to make humanity in the first place because he wanted communion. He made humanity spiritual, not just physical. He wants to know us deeply and to be deeply known by us. And I was kind of struck by some of the things in the songs that were chosen today, a chosen race. They're a chosen race, a royal priesthood. And God is, you are mighty and your faithfulness surrounds you. God's faithfulness really does surround him. And to me, the truth of the gospel has to do with everything God did, everything he set out to do, his choosing of Israel, his faithfulness to her no matter what, and his bringing redemption through his incarnate Son that came through Israel. And Yeshua was born of a woman through the faithfulness of that woman. And she was part of Israel, and she said this amazing thing I can hardly even imagine. I can't imagine what it's like to be pregnant and have a baby in the first place. I can try to imagine. She actually says, "Be it done unto me as you have spoken." And the scriptures say that every generation will count her as blessed. And they have. They still do. Some in excess from our perspective, and some perhaps in a way that's a bit too diminished. I think it's pretty notable that a Jewish maiden accepted the word that came to her by that angel and actually bore the Son of God incarnate. But let God be true, though every man be false, the scriptures say. And the only way that God can be true is if he has remained true to Israel down through the ages and will never change his mind. And I think something of the power of the gospel is actually lost when it's almost entirely separated, really, from God's covenant with Israel and how he brought it all to be. That if you get snotty and conceited about it, just remember you could be enough to. Seems to be a pretty stark warning. And he says that those natural branches, when they cease to persist in their unbelief, will be cut back into the tree. That they actually belong in. It's actually their tree, their natural to it. It's always an amazement to me that in that sense I am unnatural to it, but yet I'm added on to it, because that's not generally the way that's done when it comes to bending trees. Contrary to nature, the scriptures say. That we would all be encouraged in the deepest and most personal way against our own views of ourselves and our failures by really looking at God and looking at His Son and seeing that His faithfulness and the power of His Word is much, much stronger than the weakness of men, and that He will bring about what He's promised. And that since He's chosen Israel and He's chosen you, and He promises that He will complete all that He started, that then in grace, despite our failings and our struggles, God's faithfulness will prevail and bring about His will in us as we grow in Yeshua, and that that we can preach the gospel, that we can be evidence of the gospel, that we can see people come to God and be brought out of darkness. And that we can remember that it all has to do with God's faithfulness and His true word that never changes. It came to us, to everyone through Israel, and through Yeshua the Jew, and brought about this situation that we've been made new and we've been given new life. We've been cleansed of all of our sin and filth and brought into the performance of walking out the works that God ordained for us from before the foundation of the world, as Paul says. And that grace will do it. God's grace in us, as Paul said, for I am the least of the apostles, and I am unworthy to be called an apostle, because I persecuted the church of God. But by the grace of God, I am what I am, and His grace to me was not in vain. His grace is never in vain. And then he says, I worked harder than all of them, yet not I, but the grace of God that was with me. Whether then it was I or they, this is what we preach and this is what you believe. And I'm just going to read you a second. That was 1 Corinthians 15:9 to 11. Second book of Corinthians, in the first chapter, starting at the 18th verse. But as God is faithful, our word to you is not yes and no. For the Son of God, Messiah Yeshua, who was preached among you by us, by me and Philippus and Timothy, was not yes and no, but it was yes in him. For as many as are the promises of God in Him, they are yes. In Yeshua, they are yes. Therefore also, through Him is our Amen to the glory of God through us. Now He who establishes us with you in Messiah and anointed us in God, who also sealed us and gave us the Spirit as a pledge. That might lack some clarity, but all the promises of God are yes to you. And I think more and more, and perhaps recently, I'm seeing that so much in the world is really just about one thing. The enemy wants to prevent us from burying the gospel to the rest of humanity. He wants to distract us. He wants to discourage us. He wants to lie to us. He wants to cause us to question God's love for us. He wants to just mess with us any way he can possibly mess with us. And we'll just know he's very good at it. And he's been studying humanity for thousands of years, far longer than any of us have had the opportunity to study him in his wilds. But please don't go study him in his wilds, except for what the scriptures reveal. Because what we need to see is Yeshua, not the enemy. You don't look to the enemy for confidence in a day of trouble. You look to Yeshua, who has all authority in heaven and on earth. And so if that's true, then whatever battle we're in fighting with Him according to His will, and we have the victory. Because He has not ordained that those that call upon His name and have believed in Him and are washed in His blood should have defeat in the battle against sin within ourselves and our battle against unrighteousness in the world, which is really the battle to tell the truth, to tell the world who Yeshua is. And it is so easy to focus on one's own inability or on whatever the accompanying limitations are. But you know, sometimes Yeshua can just disappear in the clouds and the dust of all of that, even though we still know he's there. That's not the same as acting like he is there, and like he is faithful, and like he has empowered us because of his death and resurrection, through which the Spirit was poured out on flesh and blood like us. Just knowing that he is in our head isn't the same as seeing what he is and what he is doing in the world and realizing that we have been made part of it in earnest. We have the victory in Yeshua. So, I ask you, Father, to cause us here as a group to have clarity about why we're here, what our battle is, and to be so clear that we are here to make you known, and that you will use us according to your will to make you known and give us victory. And I ask you for victory over fear and over human assessment and limitations. Help us to sit with Yeshua, to learn how to count, and help us, Lord, to keep our eyes fixed upon Yeshua. Because he is our way, and nothing can shake that, because you are faithful. You've always been faithful. Please, Lord,